heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Think back on all the tales that you remember of Camelot. Ask every person if he's heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if he has not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot.
As you listen to the music and the words there, that was a 1978 performance of Camelot. That was by Richard Burton, for those of you who can remember there. It depends what generation you're from. He first performed on Broadway as King Arthur opposite Julie Andrews in that amazing original 1960 production there on Broadway. That's a moment in time, isn't it now? And the words of that are interesting. In short, they're simply not a more congenial spot for a happily ever afterin than here in Camelot. Got me thinking a little bit, huh? Of the crosswinds and the political winds and where we find ourselves in America right this very moment here. I think you would all agree with me. Donald Trump seen the selling out of America really over the last 30, 35 years. He's seen it coming. And he's documented in this. You catch him on video talking, 20 years ago, many different big talk show hosts over his time, as you recall, and some very historical interviews he had where he talked about a lot of the trials and tribulations and the troubles America was having. And what he really campaigned on back in 2015, prior to winning that historic race, which is clearly going down in the history books here in America, first time that ever happened, that somebody came out of absolutely nowhere from the business community to take the entire political class down. That was quite a feat, I got to tell you. Definitely one for the history books. But it set up the parallels here in the battle, I think, of what is America? Where are we at? What's our version of Camelot? And how does that compare and contrast to really the globalist movement we've had out of a lot of big globalist presidents over many, many years? A lot of Americans are really doing a double gulp at this point to say, where are we really at? What's going on with this country? Quite frankly, I would say to you this, a lot of people do not recognize America anymore. Because many of the things we used to talk about years ago at the water cooler, which, you'd chuckle with, are actually coming true. And people are wondering, what is that all about? So I think one of the questions I want you to think about a little bit here, and it's an interesting question, is being an American and a globalist at odds? Are they at odds with each other? And what does that really mean? How does that fit into our political landscape right now when they're trying to socialize America? Really to become another socialist state. So put all that to the air on the side. And let me bring on now, as we peel this a little bit today here and have a bigger conversation with a couple of very special people. I'm going to start with Ilana Friedman joins us. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator, a terrific author, and a fabulous host of the Friedman Report right here at America Out Loud. So, Ilana, when we look at, I want to start and let people know as we put this into context now, we see what Trump was trying to do in his version of Camelot here with the American people. Let's compare and contrast a moment to John F. Kennedy. Bring us back to Jackie and John Kennedy and what that Camelot was like back in the day. For those who may not even know, and maybe those that do, we can refresh their memory a little bit.
Well, Camelot was a Broadway musical. And in fact, Jackie said that
the president loved the music, and he was always singing it or listening to it. And when she described the time that they had in the White House, which was less than 3 years, she described that time as Camelot. That that period became known as Camelot because Jackie was beloved by the country. I mean, she had a national following that was, they liked the way she dressed, and they copied how she dressed, and they copied her pearls and her hats and so forth. And so when she called this period of time Camelot, they just embraced it. And it was a concept that was very, very popular. However, it was a concept just like in the fable of Camelot with King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. It was more fantasy than reality. It was all about the elite in Washington, and particularly around the White House. It was fancy balls and formal dinners and state affairs. And it was something very, very much for the elite that the rest of us looked on and maybe envied, maybe just enjoyed seeing it.
In that Camelot period of time with the Kennedys you're speaking about here, I think a lot of Americans looked at that as, the way I've seen it referenced, as American royalty almost, American royalty. You know, the whole Jackie, and that was kind of Camelot, wasn't it? Wasn't that kind of our version of that?
Yes, I think it was. That's exactly what it was. It was something over there. It was something up there. They were what everybody, I guess, maybe wanted to be, but right. But it was unreachable for most of us. But we enjoyed watching it. It was like watching theater. You go to the theater, you're not part of the show. You're not part of the story, but you can enjoy it. And I think this was something that Americans appreciated.
It's a good way to put it, actually. I like the way you put that. Almost like a theater, almost like a show itself. Very interesting. How does that compare now to looking at that era back to now with what Trump tried to do? Because that's what he ran on, was a lot of the things, the big globalists, the big trade deals, the out of control immigration, the upside down economy, the gutting out of America, the manufacturing, the auto, everything that went over, our energy, trying to be, and all this stuff, which really plays into our dance with socialism. Compare and contrast that.
Well, I think that when Donald Trump came in, he came in as an anti-Camelot, an anti-elite. And what was happening in government was that the elite, and particularly the elite on the Democrat side, but not completely, these people had taken over the power of government and were throwing their power around in order to accomplish their own personal agendas, but didn't really do what they should have been doing for the American people. And Trump came in and he said he wanted to clean up the swamp. I don't think that he really was thinking in terms of a Camelot, but I do think it's a relevant contrast when you talk about what John Kennedy was doing, his Camelot. And what Donald Trump created was, in fact, a Camelot, not for the elite, but a Camelot for the people. A Camelot for the people. And the result was that what he accomplished in 3 years of his being in the White House was so much more than anyone could have reasonably expected from any president.
If Donald Trump, the president, is creating all of this goodwill and bringing really, as we would say, maybe an American version of his version of Camelot, whereas Trump was the president of the people. And there was this love affair. There is this love affair with the American people and this president here. So here's what I want to think about, Ilana. Why is this such a threat, or why was it such a threat to Washington when Trump, you know, we suspect that we, or we want to at least understand or hope that these politicians go to Washington to represent the people. I mean, that's supposed to be the concept of how this works. And so I think what people have to understand now, I think it gets to the core of the fight, Ilana, we're at odds with each other in this country in a very big way. And part of this is the fabric that's ripping open and tearing off the bandage of America to expose this potential transition to socialism and a communist regime. And so I'm wondering, the political class in Washington, I mean, they fought, everybody knows they fought Trump every step of the way. Everybody's got that memo already. But why is it, with all this goodwill that Trump was doing and all the successes you just talked about, why is it that he was such a threat to these people? And what are they there for? Are they there also for the American people? Do they represent the American people? What are their ultimate goal, the political class in Washington?
Well, I think the political class in Washington has one goal, and that is to ensure that their positions are not going to be threatened. And what Trump did when he came to Washington and said he was going to clean up the swamp was a direct threat to them. And there's another thing. When the people have power, then the people who they send to Washington have less power. And my view is that people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the others, that they don't want to lose the power that they have accumulated over the years. And by the way, that power is also linked to money. They have become millionaires in Washington. Their salaries are less than $200,000 a year. So how do they become millionaires? Well, they become millionaires because they are engaged in certain things that draw money on the side that are not attached to their salaries. It has to do with lobbyists and other activities that they're able, because of their power, they get speaking fees, because of their fame, and they get fortune. They attract it.
Why can't people see this, Ilana? Why can't people see the core of the problem that you're speaking about right now?
Because I think part of the problem is not just the politicians, but the media, the press, the major players on the internet, Facebook and Twitter and all of the play Microsoft who involve themselves in the politics and have sided without any reservation and unequivocally with the left. Now, it's very interesting. You were talking about socialism. My goodness, the people who are supporting socialism are all millionaires, and they can support it because they are. They know that when socialism comes, they will be able to sit at the top of the pyramid,
right,
and they will still be able to hold on to their wealth. It's the rest of us who are going to get hurt.
Well, isn't that the definition of socialism, though? Isn't that the definition right there?
Yes, it is, of course. It is the division.
Well, but it's not of course. It's not of course. Now, this is what I want to point out to you right now. See, we tend to talk over people's heads in this topic, and it's not of course. A lot of people don't understand. They really believe socialism is for all the people, whereas it's the direct opposite. Socialism is for the elites, and there is no middle class there, and it's the rest of us. Is that not correct?
That is correct, is that this is what we have been teaching our children in public school,
right,
for the last several generations. And so they don't know the history of socialism. Mm-hmm. They see socialism as a gimme kind of operation where the government gives free stuff,
that's right,
to people, and everybody benefits, except that in reality, nobody benefits, mm-hmm, except the people at the top,
that's
of the pyramid.
So that,
and we have seen example after example of people who have accepted socialism as their form
that's
of government.
Right. That's right. And when you talk about the political class, and we're talking about what does their Camelot look like? We're struggling with world powers right now and where America fits in, because President Trump has redefined our role around the world. So what is their version of Camelot?
Well, I think their version of Camelot is what the Kennedys had, which is the elite get all the perks and they get the benefit of this this political control that they have created, mm-hmm, over the lives of the rest of America. And they are getting stronger and stronger. And if you look at what they just passed in Congress, was a law, a 5,700 page law that gave billions of dollars to countries overseas and ignored the people of America.
Exactly. Yeah.
This
yeah.
is the globalism that you're talking about that gives them the benefit of the wealth that comes in from overseas that we don't even know about. And yet when it comes to taking care of the people at home, they ignore it.
Yeah.
That is the political class. That's their Camelot.
Okay. And let me bring it back to the early 1940s, Ilana. And in the early 1940s, President Roosevelt, it was his vision of this United Nations sort of a thing. History shows there was a strategic meeting on August 14th, 1941, in fact, where this whole idea was founded, where he was in a meeting with Winston Churchill, the British Prime Minister, and this whole concept. And it became alive just months later. It became defined as the United Nations. As we look at this Camelot now, and we look at these global powers, like we see the problems we've had with the World Health Organization, we see the rise of China, and what's happening with the, President Trump, in fact, has done a pretty amazing job with the Middle East, which is another story for another day, but I'm just referencing the point. He's done some brain searching things in redefining the chessboard around the world in American politics and our version of how we interact. So, when we look at the United Nations, we look at what Roosevelt bought in and where we're at today. And I posed the question earlier on, and I want you to talk to me specifically about globalist versus our American version of Camelot, Ilana. And I asked the question, is being an American and a globalist at odds with each other, or can they coexist? And what would you say to that?
I don't think they can coexist in the way that, for example, they supposedly do in the United Nations. It's a very good example, Malcolm, because when the United Nations was founded, it was founded on democratic principles. Yeah. And the principles were that every nation would have a vote in the General Assembly, and then there would be the Security Council, where certain nations would have a more important role to play and so forth. But it was democratic. And what has happened over the years is that the countries that have come in and been active in the United Nations don't know about democracy, don't have democracy at home, and don't care about democracy. They use it as their form of Camelot, which is an elite club in which they belong and they get all the perks from, and the justice be damned. And there are a lot of examples of that we don't have time to get into, but you know, we could do a whole show on that. The problem with the United Nations is that they have reached a point in their elitism where they want to impose their particular brand of governance on the rest of the world. So for example, they want to control our gun laws. That's absurd. And it's more than absurd. It's something that is so powerful that would give them so much power that it absolutely has to be shot down. And it's reason enough for the United Nations to move somewhere else beside New York. Yeah. But this is, now, as far as the Camelot is concerned, as far as United States is concerned, we have a democracy. And it's not working very well right now, but we have the basis for something that works extraordinarily well and is good for all the people. And this is something the United Nations doesn't even have a clue about and is not interested in.
Right.
And I think that the Camelot for the American people that Donald Trump has created or did create until the virus came was extraordinary. And it was an example of what can be done in a very short period of time using our democratic system, that the Democrats have done everything they can to shoot it down, is a tragedy for America.
And it was the brilliance, Ilana, of our founding fathers that we created the United States, which a lot of people today don't understand, the United States of America, meaning there are 50 states and there's a representative government that we all get part of and then we choose. That is still a form of democracy, but it's through this representative government. Is that right? That's a good explanation, I think, for it. People get confused with that.
That's exactly right. The genius of our founding fathers is that they not only saw the importance of one person, one vote, but they also saw the importance of the smaller states that they were working with, the first the colonies, like Rhode Island, for example, or even Pennsylvania, which didn't have a huge population. They had a huge city by you know, the standards of the time, but they didn't have a huge population. And New Hampshire, for example, had a very small population. So yeah. The states were defined differently then, mm-hmm. but what they did in Philadelphia, what the founding fathers did was they recognized that they had to give a voice to the small underpopulated states.
Yeah.
Because, and that is why they created the Electoral College.
I always refer to it, Ilana, it's like having 50 countries, 50 states, 50 different thought processes, really, that come together as united. And that is one of the challenges we had through this historic election again, following the 2016 election in 2020 and the controversy surrounding it in regards to the fact that we're not all on the same playing field when it comes to how we're going to, you know, elect a president, and everybody's got a different set of rules. That's one thing I think that needs to be revisited in our nation, is that 50 sets of rules and 50 ways to elect a president is equivalent to that old song there that was sung, 50 ways to screw up your lover or leave your lover or something like that, Alana. I don't know which it is, but you know what I'm saying? it's a hell of a reference point, but I mean, come on. It's like it's 50 ways to screw up an election. We found every which way, to cut loose here in this election. And this is really a learning moment. And I bring all this out as Camelot, Ilana. It's a learning moment for our nation as well to get it right. But we're going to have to fix some of the things that have happened in the past, certainly the past months and the past years, to be able to really move forward as a people. There are many ways to look at this thing. It's a glass half full, half empty sort of thing. There are those who really believe we're done. It's a glass half empty for many. They think America is doomed. And I'm talking to people around the globe who really believe that right at this very moment. And there are those who believe that America is just getting started. I mean, we're 245 years in, very young country by any historical means. We're like I equate this, Ilana, to sort of like a teenager going through puberty. We're trying to figure out who we are, and we still don't really know as we're trying to get to age here and mature. What in our last slot here with you, what is that as a reference point? And will America get it right?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I like your analogy to 50 different countries as opposed to 50 states. When you look at how every state treated the coronavirus, the China virus, every state did it differently. And interestingly enough, the states with the greatest number of restrictions seem to be having the greatest spikes in infections. And you look at California, for example, which is completely shut down. They have I don't know what the current numbers are, but they are one of the highest infection rate, and it's spiking. And people in California are locked down. And yet you go to states that have, like Florida, that have much looser restrictions, and they're doing fine. And so there's no control over this. The states have autonomy when it comes to what they can do to their own people. And I agree with you that maybe some of this has to change, that maybe we have to become a more united country in the way our laws are crafted and in the way the laws are acted on. And one of the things, for example, that you mentioned was the voting and the voting laws. In Pennsylvania, they didn't follow their own voting laws. That's and right. In other states as well, in these key swing states where there was so much corruption, they didn't follow their own laws. They broke their own laws in order to achieve the result that Biden would win. So I think that we have a lot to address. And whether we're in puberty or whether we're in middle age, depending on how you look at it, there are choices that Americans have to make now. And the question is, going back to your original concept of Camelot, whether the Camelot that our political leaders are living in right now, that does not include the American people, mm-hmm. is going to prevail over the Camelot that Donald Trump created, which included all the American people. And that's the struggle that we're in now.
Yeah, it is indeed a struggle there. And I think it's a defining moment for our nation. When we're talking about at what point we are, you got to remember, people, again, to keep it all in context. I mean, we are a very young country by any standards around the world. At 245 years in, and it really depends about our mindset, how we look at this and what our mindset is. As I'm just speaking to Ilana about that, are we really a teenager that's sort of come through puberty? And really, you know how it is at that, you're trying to figure out who you're going to be when you grow up or what path you're going to take forward. In many ways, I equate America with that right now. And I say this as a point of optimism to you here at the end of a very interesting and significant year of 2020, one that will certainly never be forgotten in this nation, rest assured. But it is a time to redefine ourselves, to be prepared for what's coming ahead here in the future. There are some things we need to get right, and we need to get the learning lessons. And it's a real delicate balance, people. It really becomes back to the power. And you know full well, it's what we're comfortable with or what we're not comfortable with. I mean, for many of us and many of you listening, we're not comfortable with putting a lot of power in Washington, D.C. Clearly, we want to bring it back to the states and bring it back to the local communities, right? I mean, you would agree with me there. I mean, as they say, or as I learned as a young lad, less is more. And it can be that way in life. It's a very conservative way of looking at everything in life. Less can be more if you play the cards right. And you look at that in every way. In America, we could use a lot of lessons in conservatism, in patriotism, in Americanism, and where we come from and what our amazing founders put together for this great nation. I mean, which is really much of the blessings here that we are experiencing living in today. Now, a lot of the new generations have gotten off the path. And they've gone down and they're experimenting. Well, again, back to the teenager analogy I use. They're sort of experimenting with all these crazy drugs or whatever in their minds, or, you know, what the world will look like, or their version of the world, their version of Camelot. And it's scary because you see, you know, the inroads of these terrorist groups that are happening, the Antifas and the Black Lives Matter and all these Marxist groups and the gangs coming in from South America and Central America. And terrorism, which are still out there, even though some days it seems like it's a little quieter than it normally has been. We still have to have a watchful eye out for all of this. But I think that we're at this point now where these generations are going to have to play into this because it is their country. It is the future of America and the path that America is going to take forward. I think we got some work to do here. I have to tell you truthfully, my friends, I think we have some work to do. We're going to have to start to bridge the gap, number one, with our generations and stop blaming each other from the older generation to the younger generation. Listen, we can find fault with every damn generation. You can go back and find fault with the older generations as well. But I think at some point we need to come together as a people and figure out for the safety and sanctity and salvation of our life and of our terrific country, our nation. The American experiment, which is what I always refer to it as you know. And we need to figure that out as a people, but there are some things that you really do need the federal government to do well. And one of them is a secure election. And I don't think that's a stretch. I think, you know, we really need to play by one set rule. It's just like, imagine in your home for a moment that you invite all the neighbors in and you set up a monopoly board, okay? And you give everybody a different set of rules for the monopoly board. Well, what the hell do you think that game is going to look like? Come on, people. I mean, we're talking like nothing but chaos. I mean, you're talking total chaos. There's no way you're going to be able to play that game properly. It's the same thing of what's happened in this country. And I've come to the conclusion now, our election systems are in deep disrepair. And we need major, major work in election reform to the likes of what we haven't seen in this country since our very early beginnings. And I think that's a place we need to start, because if we can't get our election right, if we can't get the power of one person, one vote right, and that's one legal person that is alive, by the way, that is breathing, that is here, that is remotely, I mean, that is the essence of our representative government, our this representative democracy government, this beautiful thing of America. If we don't have that, people, we got nothing. We're no better than a third-rate, you know, Marxist country. You know, I'm often thought back to the days of Paul Harvey when he would say, "Our Father, who art in Washington," it's where the power is, isn't it now? We need to be careful. We need to keep these people, well, sort of in a checkmate position, you know, so we're ready to pounce on them at any given moment and take their king and wrestle them down. I guess so many metaphors. I can just keep spitting them out here. And in our path to find Camelot. Well, listen, we're going to take a pause here. As we do, I have a very special guest coming up again just after the pour. Someone I want you to meet here. We're going to continue to talk about this Camelot. Really, Trump's Camelot. What's the version of America's Camelot? And how do we balance that back with the globalist? Oh, man, I tell you what, lots to talk about here. Stay right there, my fellow Americans. We'll be back with you just after the pause.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
So we are in search today for America's Camelot, you know? We started with the days of JFK and we talked really more about Trump's Camelot, what he envisioned for the American people and what these first 4 years brought us. And that's really what I want to talk about today. Not so much all the controversy and the various nuances going on out there in the political landscape today, but the bigger picture of really our representative democracy republic, this capitalism and what it is in all of its glory, compared to the communist and the socialist trying to swallow America whole, and sort of our dance with the globalist movement. And how do we find that happy medium, as I pose that other question to you, is being an American and a globalist at odds, is the question, you know, that I pose there. Let me bring on a gentleman, haven't talked to him on air in a very long time, but he is such a great writer, terrific author, writer, a commentator, a speaker, analyst, calls himself a political observer. I refer to him more as a historian and a political analyst. He's a vast career in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service, and that is the one, the only, George McClellan is here. Now, if you've been reading George over the years, he's an avid writer for the network here. He's been with me from the early days of America Out Loud, coming from the ashes off the ground there back in 2016. And he and both Ilana today on this show, I refer to all the time, they are national treasures for sure. And it's a joy to have both of them here and having this talk here. We referenced JFK, we referenced Trump's Camelot. Let me throw it to you now and step out of the way a little bit and tell me where you think we're skating with this new version of Camelot right now as compared to in the days of, the JFK royalty sort of version and the globalist Camelot. There's a lot of versions of Camelot, obviously. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, first, the globalists are trying to put America in its place, line us up, I think, as just another country in their pantheon of countries who obey. But globalism will never work so long as America and capitalism doesn't stand as the primary engine of economic success. The Chinese can't do it. They may try, they may think they can, but that's not going to happen. But today, America's version of Camelot, that would be the White House that has been occupied for the last 4 years by Donald Trump. And while it doesn't have a moat around it, it still sits amid the very center of a stinky, dirty swamp. JFK, who lived in that White House, he wasn't an Arthur. He was the son of an Irish bootlegger. I take nothing away from his political skill, his cultural refinement, or his military heroism. And by today's standards, he was probably a better conservative than any we have existing today. King Arthur has long been the ultimate symbol of right versus darkness, good versus evil. The question is, was he real? Like Arthur, Kennedy was killed by his internal enemies. His spirit not to return until Donald Trump showed up on the scene in 2016 and upset the Democratic turnip cart.
Interesting way to look at it.
Well, it is. Trump's a canny businessman. He's not a politician. And he clearly saw into the broken state of U.S. politics. He didn't imagine any such nonsense as a Camelot. It probably never entered his mind. He saw American government wasn't governing at all. It was operating as a bogus social service relief agency for third world countries.
That's all that stuff. That is perfectly said right there, man. We did sort of become that, George, but that didn't happen overnight. I mean, let me stop there. Let's talk about that a moment, George, because, you know, I look at the Obama legacy, the 8 years of Barack Obama, as sort of the frosting on the cake. But that was, when I say the frosting on the cake, I mean, that was about 20, 25 years before Obama of the, and I'm talking about the Bush, Clinton, Bush and Obama years. It's just about almost 30 years there. That's kind of was really, we really took a really bigger bite out of globalism and becoming more of a global power with all these big global organizations. And it was sort of less about America, but we started sending a lot of money overseas with wars, and the military industrial complex was getting fat and happy. There was kind of, I guess if we look at that, George, was that chapter, the way I look at it, and I want you to tell me, if you're more of a historian than I am on this, wasn't that kind of sort of at the beginning to the end if we don't start to get it right?
I see your point. What politicians were doing after, and this is post-World War II, post-Korea, as a matter of fact, and during the Vietnam era, we tried to bribe other countries to love us.
And
In simple terms, that's and we're still doing it. And with this omnibus bill that Pelosi has put forward, and almost $1 trillion, it still shows that as soon as they think Trump is going to be gone, they're going to run it, go ahead and return to our giveaway programs that it is. Trump was a clear and present danger to politicians whose livelihoods depend on graft and corruption. And they are looking at him to be gone in January, and they're going to return to their old ways. Mm-hmm. And we've got to recognize that.
Yeah.
You know, Trump, if we're going to continue with the Camelot metaphor,
right?
Trump doesn't have a round table full of knights. And those politicians that do surround him are small-minded. Mm-hmm. They are people who are elites or want to be elites, and they're unwilling or unable to see or understand that their mission was to protect and defend America's holy grail.
Yeah. Let me ask you this about that round table. You make me think there. That is probably, I'm guessing, George, probably one of the core problems of the Trump administration is that he doesn't have the support. Number one, he didn't have the round table. I'm just thinking here out loud with you style. Had he had the round table of knights, the people who would defend the Republic in all these ways and defend the agenda to bring it back to the American people, the power, which, by the way, George, he promised at his inauguration. The whole essence of his speech at the inauguration back in 2016 race was exactly about this. It was bringing the power back to the people. He talked about it endlessly. But isn't that's probably the problem. When you say you're going to drain a swamp, you really have to pull the plug a little quicker and start to change those agency heads and get the people out of there. That's probably one of the points that I think Trump fails at. I don't think he did a good job with that. What do you think, sir?
Well, that's right. He had people who GOP put in front of him as potential people to run his campaign, run his office, run the GOP from the inside. And a lot of them were never Trumpers. And they're still out there. And a lot of them actually worked and developed their skills under Obama.
That's right. George, didn't he have a round table of backstabbers?
Well, who needs that?
Exactly.
Yes, they were there. They were certainly there. And most of them are people who were living in the swamp and took their nourishment from the swamp. I mean, Paul Ryan's a good example. I think Paul Ryan was a backstabber. America, he had for 2 years, Trump had a Republican Congress and the Senate. And he could have made all kinds of inroads if they would have just seen what he saw. He saw an America that was melting away.
Yeah. George, you said something just absolutely brilliant moments ago here, as you always do. And I think it's a future article. It's probably a future book, but it certainly could be a future show as well. And that is Donald Trump, a clear and present danger to the establishment, that is, you see.
Yep.
And you could almost call it, you know, people both sides would read it when you say Donald Trump, a clear and present danger. I could see even leftists picking that up and people, socialists thinking, oh my God, yeah, he is to their mind and their version of Camelot, he's damn well a clear and present danger. But really, in our way of looking at a clear and present danger is that it is to the establishment. They are truly threatened by somebody like Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't eat their brand of cornflakes. He beats to a different drum. The way I look at Trump, George, and let me just put it out here with you since we're just among friends here, and why hold back since we're at the end of the year here? I don't think he gives a damn about any of these people. I'm talking the political class I'm speaking about. And I think he's in it to right the ship. I think he got to a point of his life, he said, you know what? Well, back to his words. I'll use his words a moment. What do you got to lose? I think he looked at the corruption and the corrosion of America from the sidelines, from the distance, you know, and got to a point of his life. Or how much of this, you know, how much of the knickknacks and the stuff in the buildings can you use in your life if the country is going to pot and going to hell in a handbag? Not a hell of a lot when you look at your kids and you look at your grandkids and you can say, well, what do we got here? This Camelot thing has a stench to it, man. We got to be able to, you know, get that system drained and get, you know, freshen it up. So he was, George, we just lived through. Now you tell me something. You've been around a lot longer than I. And you look through all your political experience and all these years, George, and, you know, we just probably, well, let me phrase it as a question, actually. The 4 years with Trump, how do you put that into historical context a moment through your lifetime I'm talking about, George, now, what you personally experienced? My guess is we've just lived through one of the most, or it could be probably the most, historical moment in America's history since the Civil War, since the 1860s. Talk to me.
I think Trump's ascendancy to the presidency, while it shocked everybody, it delighted 78 or 79 million Americans who voted for him because he made promises. He looked like a braggart. No one, if you didn't watch his television show from New York City, would never have known who he was. And yet here he comes out with a businessman's mind, absolutely looks at what the problems in America is and promises us he'll set about correcting it. And he kept his promises.
Yeah. And that was most unusual because we never seen a person, a politician, because he wasn't a politician, keep their promises. And he did it. Here's what's unique about that, George. He did it in spite of tremendous political winds that were blowing over and really trying to push him down. I mean, think about, you know, you look at him and back to the classic cartoons we watched as kids where you had the underdog come in or Superman or some sort of a superhero kind of person. And with all the winds blowing at that person here, he was trying to, you know, keep the promises, really reshaped the landscape of Camelot here in America in a very unique way. And he did it with such force playing against him. Was there a moment historically in your lifetime that would match to this moment right now with Trump?
You asked in your first question, you asked me, I didn't get around to one idea. Trump has brought joy to the political process, particularly the conservative political process. And I say joy, look at the thousands of people who turned out for his rallies everywhere, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. While this other guy couldn't get out of his basement, and when he did, he couldn't read his teleprompter correctly. That's what I feel. I've never experienced such joy in politics as I did until Trump became the president. Of course, that was all affected by the Mueller business and the Russian business. All of that is now. Why are those people being prosecuted? I don't know. The attempt to impeach him by the Democrats in the House. I mean, all these things, but he overrode all of that. And he brought joy to the American people. And now we're confused. Americans are confused because now we know we voted for Donald Trump for another term. And we know it was stolen. It was stolen from us. And the thing is that the Democrats were so greedy, they couldn't keep it even down close. They had to make it so overwhelming in areas that even Obama didn't win, that it was patently obvious. Nobody can convince American voters, conservatives, that Donald Trump's election wasn't stolen from them. So we support him now, and we are looking forward to, hopefully, he invokes the Constitution, his constitutional right under the Insurrection Act to correct the problem. Thing is, if this election problem is not corrected, it will never be corrected.
Yeah, that is the sense I'm getting from a lot of people. And you feel the same way then. If this isn't fixed now, right? Yeah, wow.
That's right.
So you look at this as a moment then in time, basically. George, so back to fixing this. My guess is that as we look at, again, this talk about a Camelot here in our days of where we are in America, and there are many metaphorically ways to look at America, where we are in our lifespan as a nation. You know, historically, many great empires and powers have burnt out. And yet in the flame of liberty that America showcases around the globe is still burning, although it's being questioned right now, George, because I have had a serious amount of communications in here from people around the globe, very interesting people, who are questioning what America is up to, why they reference the point that we have become, in short order, the laughing stock around the globe, is the way several people, and they say it in different ways, different contexts, but the end product is that. They just can't believe that America, they actually believe America is being taken down right now. In fact, I'm going to be addressing this on Viewpoint, but there are a lot of people around the globe who think America is being taken down right now, multiple notches. How do you feel about that?
I believe that too. I believe that too. All you have to do is watch the Democrats in action. The hypocrisy drips out of everything they say and do. Now they're trying to take credit for the virus, a vaccine, but they won't give credit to the 4 years that Trump reestablished America's economic prowess in the world. I mean, who would believe that? Who would believe that? Who's going to legitimize Biden? You know, King Arthur got his legitimacy from the Lady in the Lake. Well, who would believe a tart rising up out of a lake dispensing swords as legitimizing the kingship? Who can legitimize Biden's presidency when it's so patently obvious that it was stolen? Mm. Yes, we are sinking. America is sinking. And unless something drastic, did you see the headline today? I think in Michigan, there were people lining up pro-Trumpers demanding action at the state house, and they were faced by Antifa's. You know what the Antifa's said? And the Antifa's were armed. The Antifa's, we're not supporting Biden. We're supporting Karl Marx.
Wow. Well, that just shows you the cultural collapse that we're talking about here and the generational problem we're dealing with, and the fact that the political class have laid their swords down and allowed the evil people that want to do harm. And I mean, they're taking control. And we've seen that fight in our cities, George, and we've seen it in our communities. Every time there's a flashpoint of some point in the country that they can politicize. And it all comes back to trying to take America down and tear it apart. You know, we often say, George, it's not a global enemy that is going to be our real problem. It's going to be the enemy within. Now, I talk about this all the time. I believe this to be true. I've discussed this from my early days as a political commentator, that the enemy within is what most concerns me, not the global enemies, which we can deal with them in various ways. And I don't mean by always being at endless wars. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I think that's a danger point for us, isn't it? This enemy from within.
Well, yeah, it is. There was a time after World War II, from beginning of World War II through to the Korean War, that we were all Americans. The Democrat Party supported the Constitution, just variations of it. And now they don't support it at all. It's in their way. It's a hindrance to them. So we are politically divided. And the cultures are clashing because of that political division. No one wants to believe the Constitution anymore. And that's the greatest document since the scriptures ever written.
Yeah, it is indeed. No, that is a fact. It is it is always referenced as a one in two, with the Bible and the Constitution as being the greatest documents of our lifetime. And I know for me, that is the case, probably for George as well, and probably for you out there. You might even agree with that, depending on what your faith is, whether you have the Bible as one or two. But they really are the two most important documents of our lifetime. This is what makes America so unique as the shining light of liberty, that it is indeed, it is almost in the perilous harbor, you know, as we're coming into the shore, and you see the light focusing on where the safety is. That's what America always is. It was many times referenced from the torch in the harbor up in New York, of course, that became with Ellis Island and became a symbol of all that America was. But of course, that has been taken hostage as well in past years now, with immigration being a problem. America is at the moment, my fellow Americans, of redefining itself, I believe. Again, we have to go through these chapters where we redefine who we are and what our mission is. And we are doing that as a people again in our nation. We must have optimism. We must have hope for what tomorrow is, but we must not be complacent, and we must not let the evildoers have their way, both here at home, domestically, and globally. We must stand up for the only fight that matters, the fight that I speak to you about all the time, and you know what that is. That is the fight of good and evil. That is the fight here. It is the fight that plays to Camelot, in fact. So I think as we look at, you know, this amazing chapter of American politics and history, and we reference the days of Camelot and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and the years and his battles with Nixon, and all the way through the Ronald Reagan days, and what a moment of American history, and who brought back American patriotism and the love of America. And then we've seen again this trek to moving towards a globalist country, nation over these past 30 years, I reference often. And we find ourselves again now at a very interesting crossroads where America is really have to redefine the rules again of our Camelot. There are ways we can do this. There are absolutely ways we can define the new version of America. And again, starting with what I've referenced earlier to you, getting our election systems right, getting this down. And we need to do some work there, because they're at a tipping point where we are falling into a third world status country in regards to even how to conduct an election, with the Dominion voting systems and all of these questionable telltale signs that have come through this election system. I mean, it's no different than, in fact, that's where these election systems come from, is a third world country. And so this is a moment where we've got to redefine even our basic rules of engagement, one person, one vote, and how that's transacted and how we count those votes. And then how we have a representative government and we bring it to the floor and say, this is going to be our leader for the next 4 years. Or if you're running, if it is a presidency or a congressman or a senator or mosquito catcher in your local community, whatever it is, it's done by the voice of we the people. That is, and we've got to stand tall as our own version of the Knights of Round Table, I guess, because Trump didn't have that. And that's where the MAGA movement and people who passionately love their country have stood tall behind this president here. Well, that's my hope for the new year, is one of greatness for America. It is one where the light of liberty will continue to shine. It is one where you will also be engaged and be part of this as we take America back and the maturity of America. And we do this in a way out in the open, so we can all see what's being done and embrace what our founders put together here in America's version of Camelot. And, you know, Richard Burton, again, back in 1978 with that performance of Camelot, which we will play on the way out here. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever afterin than here in America's Camelot. It's time to get involved and get loud.
Each evening from December to December, before you drift to sleep upon your cot, think back on all the tales that you remember of Camelot. Ask every person if he's heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if he has not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot.
Camelot, Camelot, I know it is a place in war, but in Camelot, Camelot, those were the
legal laws. Where once it never rained till after sundown, by 8 a.m. the morning fog had flown. Don't let it be forgot that once there was a spot for one brief shining moment.